We have a government policy now, the safeguard mechanism having come in 2022, that is legislated, and it's in. With this election that we've just had in Australia, we'll probably have the same government for two election cycles. Everyone here, pundits, seem to agree.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's 6 years on top of, you know, really a safeguard mechanism. You could say, argue it's been around as an idea since 2019. So we'll get to our 10-year milestone in Australia of having this policy, the safeguard compliance mechanism, and it'll be baked in.
Welcome to The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar, Executive Director of Media here at FS Sustainability. We are recording on Gadigal land, and we pay our respects to the traditional custodians of country and elders past, present, and emerging. Raph Wood, Co-Managing Director of Silver Capital, joins us in this episode to share his insights on the latest in his world. Silver Capital is a carbon fund and asset manager that specializes in the origination and management of high-integrity Australian carbon credit units projects. Raph, thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure, Michelle. It's great to be here.
For those who are not familiar with the fund, tell us a little bit more about when it was founded and why.
It's an interesting question, and the answer is quite personal. Silver Capital is the result of a promise that I made to my six-year-old daughter back in 2010, which was to spend the rest of my career limiting the impact of climate change on her and her brother and sister. And I come from a coal and gas geology background, mining and exploration, and 10 years as a commodities trader. And when asked by my daughter, what was I doing about climate change, I didn't really have an answer that she thought was right. And the look of disappointment has spurred me on to do everything I can. So Silver Capital is a fund that tries to solve for all of the challenges of investing in carbon alongside agricultural outcome and biodiversity impact. It's our goal to show that food, fiber, and biodiversity can go hand in hand and have a triple win for the economy, the community, and the Indigenous stakeholders. Silver Capital is a vehicle designed primarily on the lessons learned from investors, private equity, and corporates looking to find a return which has access to carbon credits as the distribution, if you will. So investors invest in Silver Capital and receive their proportionate share of the carbon credits that are created from the project or the projects, the suite of projects. Every year that they're issued, they get their proportional share and they can choose to sell those in the market if they want to hold them in their book, or we can sell them for them into the market at arm's length market pricing. But most of our cornerstone investors to date have been emitters in the Australian safeguard mechanism, that they will almost certainly want to take those carbon credits and use them to meet their compliance and voluntary obligations. But financial investors can still get financial returns without needing to own or trade the carbon credits.
You can't have a more profound beginning to a company than a six-year-old daughter talking to the dad and saying, what are you doing about climate change? Now, you've mentioned that the Silva was founded in 2010. How has the industry changed in the 15 years? Is it easier now? Is there a better system today than 15 years ago?
Yeah, Silver's was founded a year and a half ago, but the vision and the people behind Silver is from 2010. But the question still remains, how has it changed over the last 15 years? Well, when I came into this market in 2010 as a budding sustainability, someone who wanted to get into this career, and how do you do it? What do you do? We actually had to build everything. The 10-step plan to bond yield level risk-weighted returns was a 20-year plan. It couldn't happen quickly because in 2010 we didn't have a policy. In 2000, a climate change policy. We had rejected the carbon pricing reduction scheme at CPRS in 2007-08. But we're on the verge of the carbon pricing mechanism under the Julia Gillard government. So that came in, and we had a policy. And I think it's fair to say it was the best. I think it was one of the best emissions reduction policies in the world, lessons learned from all around the world. And then, unfortunately, with through some political back and forth, that became a tax, and it was repealed in 2013. So again, we had nothing. Instead of running away, we a group, quite a few of us, veterans now, lent in and tried to design the emissions reduction fund, or the safe, as it was at the time, under the Carbon Farming Initiative, to create a market that would function. We built the emissions reduction fund to create, to allow supply to continue to be generated, and the government being the major buyer. And over the last 15 years, that's the government stepping in, becoming the major buyer, has allowed the market to catch up. And now the market's shot ahead. I say market, investors to catch up, or corporates to catch up. And the market's shot ahead, and the government is transitioning out of the way, but giving it back to the market. So we're at a point now. In 15 years ago, we didn't have a market. 10 years ago, we had a fledgling market that was going nowhere with no liquidity, no forward pricing. In 2018, a group of us started putting out supply, demand, and price forecasting for the first time on the new commodity, which was carbon. I have a commodities trading background, so I knew it was very important to have some kind of forecasting out in the market. We got that at 2020 in Australia. We had massive fires. It really changed the paradigm on climate change. I think Australia very much unanimously agreed after that climate change was real and it was going to have an impact on us. And so every company that was out there that had a retail presence in particular had to have a climate strategy. And so we had a consulting business that had evolved out of the analytics business, and we were able to help work with them to help them to understand the future price impact on their business, and working with them to procure offsets to meet the needs immediately, and then to take into account their future strategy, carbon, in their future strategic decisions. And that can be internal carbon prices and a whole bunch of different ways that we work with them. And the market's now got to the point where there's a wonderful number of consultants who are really skilled and enthusiastic about assisting. There are lots of participants now on the buy side and sell side. Intermediaries have come in. Banks are lending on carbon projects and forward creating derivatives and structures and financial structures that can assist in financing carbon projects. We have a government policy now, the safeguard mechanism having come in 2022, that is legislated, and it's in. With this election that we've just had in Australia, we'll probably have the same government for two election cycles. Everyone here, pundits, seem to agree.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, that's 6 years on top of, you know, really a safeguard mechanism. You could argue it's been around as an idea since 2019. So we'll get to our 10-year milestone in Australia of having this policy, the safeguard compliance mechanism, and it'll be baked in.
Speaking of milestones, you've also reached your own milestone, and that is the planting of 160,000 mixed species native trees since the first close of the Silva Carbon Origination Fund in July last year. So first of all, congratulations on that. For me, as an occasional hiker, it just gives me like a great visual of what you've done. But how do you work with local communities to achieve your fund's aims?
It is truly a momentous occasion. I know there's more than 160,000 trees been planted around the country up to this point, but these are, for us, the first that have been financed at that investment grade level and have investment grade returns. The engagement with community and connected communities, including the indigenous communities of the areas in which we work, has been an amazing thing to be part of. We've been working in these communities for a number of years. We've identified these areas as high yielding carbon areas, and the land value and the agricultural value of the land and the returns from carbon assist us to find a commercial site. We've been purchasing the land to have control over the legal aspects that are very difficult to manage if you don't own the land. And then we've been engaging with local experts, local farm managers, people who were born on the land, in some cases next door to the properties that we've acquired, and getting them back on to help us to manage the agricultural side of the land, where they buy into what we're trying to achieve with open woodland. And most importantly, and super exciting for us, has been the engagement with the indigenous communities. Many of them have had native title extinguished in the areas in which we operate. However, we've engaged them as if they did, and we've sought free prior informed consent And we've engaged them to do planting, to do cultural heritage surveys with us, to come on the ground, to come back onto country and give us help to design this project in a way that will to mirror pre-1788 kind of impacts. And it's really encouraging, and it's truly soul building to work with the local Indigenous communities and get them on country. We've worked with where we can with local contractors, local fencers, local weed sprayers, all of the local employment that will generate, I think is going to, I'm no doubt we've done sort of analysis of it, will increase employment in the area because we're constantly managing this project. It's not just a cattle grazing property anymore. So really positive impacts with local communities. We'll have a challenge when you start planting trees on land that's been cleared for generations. You have to overcome, you have to let the community see the vision, which is an integrated carbon, biodiversity and agricultural project. But we've no doubt that the silver pasture nature of what we're doing, which is cattle under trees, is going to find that balance that allows us to get that community buy-in for the long term.
You've just mentioned the B word there, biodiversity. Why is it important to manage biodiversity risks? And what is the upside for investors?
The way we approach our projects has inherently a positive impact on biodiversity. Planting 160,000 mixed species trees on a project area inherently brings back biodiversity. So for us, it's a positive impact. We need to be careful about negative impacts and make sure we have species, selection. That risk being mitigated as part of the planet is sort of the only risk is that we get the species mixes wrong. But I think we got that fine. The value for investors is that it is a potential financial return that at the moment isn't modeled. We don't have a financial market or any kind of forecasting on supply, demand and price in Australia for biodiversity. We have a mechanism. We have the nature repair market, which is legislation that was passed earlier this year. And therefore, there's a potential value there. I'm proud to say today that late last week, we submitted what we believe is the first project under the nature repair market's environmental planting methodology in Australia, which is a monumental occasion. And we've done that to ensure that we have taken baselines of our biodiversity on site before the project and that we can measure, verify and verify the biodiversity impact, positive as we would imagine, and that potentially in the future when markets evolve, materialize that economic value of biodiversity. Again, proving that it can integrate into agriculture and carbon projects is part of the plan. So for us, biodiversity is super important. We didn't really want to tackle. I didn't really want to tackle another environmental market, which requires architecture, design, all the analytics and forecasting and strategy that's got to come for that market to reach investment grade. But you know, what else are you going to do with the next 10 years? So. Silver Capital's there to prove that we can do that, and we'll lean right into biodiversity markets and their evolution over the next 5 to 10 years.
I feel like now that's for your future grandchildren that you're now tackling biodiversity. Mm. The view is that biodiversity risk management is certainly the next climate change management that people are trying to tackle. So it's double congratulations, I guess, for this episode with the back-to-back news. Finally, it feels like the world has changed since Trump became president. Has this impacted the fund's short and long-term strategies to meet its objectives?
Yeah, we're in a really chaotic world right now. The long-term strategy remains in place, regardless of the 3 or 4 year cycles of politics. Climate change is a serious problem and requires serious mitigation, and we're on that journey to 2050. We're 25-year projects. So without being flippant, the cyclical nature of politics is understood that its go is always going to change. I personally think that the Trump impact is a pendulum that's swinging wildly. Mm. We've just had an election in Australia that has wholeheartedly rejected Trumpism as a political agenda. And I think we'll see that happen around the world, even in America. over some time. We'll see that occur. And I think it's galvanized us in Australia to what our core principles are about who we are. Not to parrot, you know, the Prime Minister's speech, but you know, we know who we are and we reject that. And so in terms of the silver capital, we will push on with the strategy, which is a long-term strategy. It has impacted in the short term investor confidence, of course, around the world. Investors are just pausing. We're fluid with that. We've raised $100 million and another 20 or so million in debt facility. We've placed that, so our projects are off and running. We have no delay to those projects. The next round of capital raise will take a bit longer as we work through the investor confidence process. But a lot of Australian corporates and financial impact investors can see that now's the time, particularly with the Labor government being elected and the Greens and the Greens in the Senate, that we're in a period of focus on this climate change area. So I think 15 years in environmental markets, if you're still here, you've figured out how to tolerate those 3 year cycles.
Those pendulum swings, as you say.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Once again, thank you for joining us today. I learned so much about the behind the scenes workings of this industry and what you're doing with your carbon origination fund. Appreciate your time and all the best. I can't wait to get an update on your latest initiative around biodiversity.
Yeah, we're really excited to get that project officially registered and be able to trumpet that from the rooftop. So we'll maybe come back and have a chat to you about that when we have more certainty.
Absolutely. Raf, thank you for joining us.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
This is The Greener Way. I'm your host, Michelle Baltazar. Thank you for listening.
The Greener Way podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.